First of all, Ishmael and Noe, welcome to the show.
Hello, this is Noe here, Jerry, and we just love being on your show. We are having so much fun with these UFO conferences, and I'm so glad that my good friend Ismael Cuellar from Laredo is also joining us tonight. So we're just thrilled to be on. Thank you.
Okay, Ishmael, so you walked into the TV stations, told them you had to use the phone, huh?
Yes, the people here in Laredo are good people, so they opened up our doors for this opportunity to talk with you all, and it's always a pleasure and honor to be right next to Mr. Torres and do this conference as well. Now that we're having fun doing this, we're spreading the word about the mysteries of the world.
And, you know, you've got quite a reputation yourself, Ishmael, doing very high-tech work down there. And so it does not surprise me that you're good friends with the people at the television station. First of all, Noe, how's the conference looking?
The conference in Laredo is looking extremely good, thanks to all the hard work, the sweat equity that my good friend Ismael and his entire group of Laredo Paranormal Research Society members. I think he's 30 members strong now, Ismael. Is that right? You have about 30 in your group?
That is correct, sir.
So they have been putting in the hard work behind the scenes, Jerry, to bring this conference together. Ismael also helped me put together the Roswell 2012 conference in Roswell, New Mexico this summer, which was a smashing success as well. We had over 1,000 people attend that one. And he was also a featured speaker at the Edinburgh UFO Conference in Edinburgh, Texas, which is my hometown, that we had on August 10th. And but what's really fascinating, and Ismael will have more to say about this as the show goes on, what's really fascinating is the high-tech research that he and his group are doing into mystery orbs, including the Marfa lights, as well as ghosts and apparitions. That's something that, you know, whenever Ismael and his group speak and give show videos of their research, it's just absolutely silent in that auditorium. You can hear a pin drop in there. Everybody is just amazed.
Ismael, is that what you're going to speak on in Laredo?
We're going to have a bonus feature of the evidence captured of North and South Laredo of mystery lights on video, and we're going to give one of the best videos, phenomena that we cannot explain, and we have given it to different experts on astronomy and also meteorologists. We capture a beam of light coming out of a cloud going up above, way above the horizon, and it was captured in night vision. So this is one of the main things we're going to be talking about, and also we're going to have a laser show, and we're going to have some of the sophisticated equipment, having the public participate on using this equipment, and so they can see themselves what technology is out there that really works for this type of research.
Now, you explained in your presentation down at the Border Zone Conference how you were able to get some of this high-tech equipment. That's because you're connected with law enforcement, and you have the ability to really use the latest equipment in, as far as seeing things. Is that right?
That is correct. A resource for us is law enforcement to use some of this equipment, and some of this equipment are combined with other technologies like lenses, relays. So it's not only that it's the law enforcement equipment, but it started from there. It's just a night vision, and you put a lens, and you put some type of relays, a good tripod, and you have a very good instrument to see the night sky. And also you can record it in a DVR system, but that is a combination of different technologies all in one, and that's because the Laredo Paranormal Society, the commitment of the members, have brought a lot of things of studying of how equipment and lenses and new technologies have given us a big breakthrough on finding things in the sky that we cannot explain.
We mentioned that conference in Laredo. What time does Ishmael speak?
Well, we have a very interesting lineup of speakers. We've got, of course, the world's best-known UFO researcher, Stanton Friedman, will be speaking twice, lecturing twice. Ismael's presentation on Laredo UFO mysteries will be held at 2:30 in the afternoon, and Stan is speaking at 10:15 in the morning, and also again at 6 p.m. in the evening. And there will be three other speakers as well. Dr. Robert Gross, who is a longtime UFO researcher and an expert on the Kecksburg, Pennsylvania UFO crash. And also Steve Androsko, a good friend of mine, who is an excellent researcher and has helped me with several of my books. He will be speaking about the case that he assisted me with most recently, which is the Aliens in the Forest, Cisco Grove UFO encounter case. And I will be speaking, updating everyone on the latest news that we learned as part of what happened in Presidio, Texas with the Border Zone International Festival. We actually had several witnesses come forward. They didn't want to speak during the town hall meeting that we had, but they spoke to us afterward. So we're going to update the whole Mexico's Roswell 1974 crash near Presidio, Texas, at 3:45 in the afternoon on Saturday at the Laredo UFO conference. We're really looking forward to this. This is something that the citizens of Laredo have shown a great amount of interest. We had an attendance of close to 1,000 people at the first annual Laredo UFO conference 1 year ago, and now we've got the second annual. Thanks to the efforts again of Ismael and his group, and the city of Laredo, as well as their Convention and Visitors Bureau. They've all been extremely supportive. We want to send a shout out to Eileen Ramos, who has been super supportive of our efforts to put this together for a second year running. So we're very excited.
Now, we have plans to link to your video coverage. Is that still on?
Yes, absolutely, Jerry. We will be...
It worked so well with the Border Zone Conference.
I think we kind of set a pattern for how we want to do these things in the future. We want to have a nice, clean audio feed coming directly from the PA system at the conference center where we're having these UFO conferences. And since there suddenly seems to be, Jerry, for whatever reason, there seems to be an outpouring of support for having more of these types of events here in the Southwest and specifically in the state of Texas, we are literally in negotiations and talks with several cities throughout the state of Texas who want to hold an event similar to what we did in Presidio, and also in Roswell and in Edinburgh and last year's Laredo Festival. And we've been contacted by many people. Ismael is also helping me out, as well as his group. We're planning to have a conference in Del Rio, Texas, in March, and Edinburgh is having a major one-day conference as well in either March or April. So we're extremely excited, and yes, we definitely will be feeding you the audio as well as the video from this conference.
Right. Well, we'll have the link to the video on jerrypippin.com and the audio. We'll do it like we did last time. We'll broadcast it on Inception Radio, at least part of it. We'll get the schedule later in the week so people will know about it. But, it worked out very well. Is there any admission down in Laredo?
Yes, Jerry, the city has, of course, expenses. They offered us the use of very nice meeting facilities with AV equipment, computer equipment, an outstanding situation for us. In order to just recoup the expenses on that, there will be a $10 per person admission fee, which is, you know, it's very reasonable. And you go out.
That's an all-day affair.
Yeah, you go out and buy a couple of Big Macs, and you've spent $10. And this is an all-day affair, as you've pointed out. People are going to get stamped for reentry, so they can come and go throughout the day. You know, we might have people that just mainly want to listen to Stan Friedman, who is an awesome lecturer, and we're very, very fortunate to be getting him down here in South Texas to speak. So they can come for the morning lecture, get stamped, and come back for his evening lecture if that's all they want to do. But we certainly encourage them to listen to all the speakers because all of the presentations are going to be top-notch.
Yeah, and, you know, we kind of brushed over the Kexberg presentation, but I understand that fellow is really up on all of that. And for people maybe in your part of the country may not even be aware of that Kexberg experience.
Well, if we have a couple of moments, I'd like to go over that. Is this a good time, Terry?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I've learned a lot from listening to Dr. Bob Gross, who is going to be the presenter for this. He's a college professor in McAllen, works at South Texas College, and has over 20 years experience working in UFO and paranormal research. And most of the work he's done has been in the Pennsylvania area where he is from originally, and he has recently taken a position here in South Texas. But when he was in Pennsylvania, he was a member of a very active paranormal investigation group called the Pennsylvania Association for the Study of the Unexplained. And as part of that group, or while he was part of that group, he had access to a great number of materials, rare materials about the reported crash of a UFO on December 9th, 1965, in a forested area at Kexburg, Pennsylvania. And now, what happened there, Jerry, is that thousands of people saw this large, brilliant fireball, which, you know, could have easily been mistaken for a meteorite, you know, coming down through the Earth's atmosphere, except that it changed course several times and was not actually falling. It at times appeared to be rising and moving left and right, up and down. So thousands of people saw this over at least six states in the U.S. and also in Ontario, Canada. Well, after this object that was zigging and zagging across the sky over six states in Canada, it reportedly crashed in a forested area about 30 miles southeast of Pittsburgh, a small town, as I mentioned, called Kexburg. Well, you have never in your life, probably not since 1947 Roswell incident, have you seen so many military personnel suddenly show up, cordon off the area, block off all the roads, you know, go in there with hazmat gear and all kinds of equipment and flatbed trailers and stuff. And witnesses tell us that after this reported crash of this object, they saw one of the military trucks carrying out an object that was roughly about the size, the appearance or the shape of an acorn, like a large acorn. And they described it as being as large as a Volkswagen Beetle. And people saw that this object had written on the side of it some very strange writing that resembled Egyptian hieroglyphics. Now, as you know, writing that is undecipherable to human beings is a common thing that is seen in major UFO sightings of the past, such as the Roswell incident and many others. There are symbols or writing of some kind that cannot be traced as having originated on our planet. And that was certainly the case in the Kecksburg incident. So the military came in, they kept people away from where this crash happened, they took away this strange object, and then there were, of course, all kinds of denials that anything had been found or that anything had happened. And there's been many cover stories attempted, such as a Russian satellite had fallen, out of orbit and it crashed, and that turned out to be not true, because they examined, after the fall of communism, they examined all of the space probes and other objects that the Soviets had in orbit at that time, and they didn't have anything that crashed in that area. And so this is an extremely, it's considered one of the world's, one of the top five major UFO cases of all time. And Dr. Gross brings to this lecture an incredibly strong background in investigating this case, once again, because of his work with the Pennsylvania Association for the Study of the Unexplained, and having lived in the Pennsylvania area, not far from Kecksburg, nearly his whole life. So we're really looking forward to hearing his presentation on that.
It sounds pretty good. Ishmael, you've done your fair amount of investigating, and you're going to talk about UFOs basically at this Laredo conference, and you use all this high-tech equipment. Have you ever been able to get a fix on a UFO to figure out, for instance, figure out what their power source is or anything like that?
That's a very good question. We have a lot of theories that we talk them on the group. They use some type of a cloaked energy that you can't see. But what amazes me, is that you don't hear sound, no propulsion or engine sound. So we scratch our heads all the time to see what kind of engineered motor system that they have to carry, because they fly in with a lot of turns and twists, and you see them with a high speed, and it's just amazing when we videotape it. Sometimes even with our tripods, we have a hard time to follow them. So it's something that it's in our drawing boards to think of what is it that you're using. So that's the mystery, the big mystery.
Have you had an idea or a hypothesis or a conclusion about these things? Do you think there are various, maybe I should phrase it another way, different kinds of UFOs?
We have three theories. Of course, military. It can be a sophisticated, engineered by the military, or something that is a natural phenomena that we're fixing to use night vision, seeing another world that we haven't really discovered, that it comes out in a different spectrum. Some of us are very, we need to see it to believe it, but there are things you can't see beyond what we can see, and of course there's energy that we're capturing up with special cameras, or they're extraterrestrials. The question is, for extraterrestrials, what are they doing here? That's the big question that we have in our group, if it is one of the theories that we believe in our group. But, that's where the mystery, and that's why we continue investigating, and hopefully in the future we can get an answer to all those questions that we have.
Yeah, Noy, how about you? Do you have pretty much the same ideas about it all that Ishmael does?
Yeah, here's a key point that Ishmael just said, and a lot of people don't think about this. It sounds so simple, and yet it's extremely important. The human eyesight, human sight, is not capable of picking up all of the signatures emitted by various wavelengths of light and energy. We are very limited in what the human eye can detect. Now, we're starting to see that because of the equipment such as Ishmael and his group brings into play. We're starting to see that, they can put these special lenses and these special scopes out there, And suddenly you're seeing the heat signatures of objects that cannot be seen with the naked eye. You're seeing trace spots appear in the night sky that you would not be able to see without the special equipment. So, you know, for all we know, there are laws of physics, many laws of physics and interdimensional possibilities that we have not yet discovered or stumbled upon. You know, science is not a static thing. It keeps growing. We keep learning. We keep discovering new things. And it would be quite cynical and quite unrealistic for anyone to say that science has reached a point where it has discovered all that there is to be discovered, or just about all that there is to be discovered. You know, before the discovery of the atom, many people doubted that the atom could be split, that energy could be harnessed out of the splitting of the atom. And as Stan Friedman points out in his lectures, there were people that were scoffing in the 1940s and early 50s. There were people that were scoffing at the idea of ever taking a spaceship into Earth orbit, and much less traveling all the way to the moon and back. So science is a progressive changing, it keeps changing and redefining the universe. And I am really looking forward to hearing Stanton Friedman's two talks in Laredo, because as you know, Jerry, and you've interviewed him many, many times, but nobody that I have ever heard or whose work I have ever read has a firmer grasp on the significance of UFOs and interstellar travel. Being a nuclear physicist himself and someone who worked on classified nuclear-powered rockets and various other projects for the U.S. government, there's no one else that has quite the grasp on this topic than Stan Friedman does, who's been doing research on UFOs since the late 1950s. He's in his 70s now, but extremely energetic and extremely fascinating, more fascinating than ever to listen to. So we think that there's a possibility that these visitors are taking advantage of rules of physics that we have yet to discover here on Earth. And they're certainly operating within spectrums of light and energy that we cannot detect without some assistance.
Yeah, I know, Noe and Ishmael, that maybe you can get in on this part of the conversation, since you use a lot of high-tech equipment and are detecting things, as Noe pointed out, things that the human eye does not necessarily pick up.
Yes, sir.
You know, when you talk about in your presentation, you talk about that giant. In fact, you show an amazing video of that giant flying triangle. It flew over Laredo there. Is that right?
That is correct, sir. Just to give you an example of energy that we don't see and we use on a day in, day out on different areas. For example, there's gamma ray, X-ray, ultraviolet light, and there's infrared light and microwave. All this are different type of photon energies that we can see, but it exists. And you can see how microwave energy, you know, use a microwave, you can see how this energy manifests itself and it cooks with different photons of energy and frequency. So there is a lot of energy we cannot see, but that's why when you use a specialized camera that can see this energy and the heat signatures and it manifests and it moves with intelligence, and you put that in a category and you document it, and you start putting in, and you know, is this a natural phenomenon, or is this extraterrestrial, or engineered by human? That's where we are at right now in our group. But going to the same thing, what we did on recording that triangular was amazing. You know, it had no sound. It was cloaked with this energy that you can't see, very similar to infrared light, and it just hovered over Laredo, Texas, and we got a couple of seconds of it, and it was astonishing for us because we took it to different law enforcement agencies, We even had Border Patrol agents that I've worked with the Predator. They've seen the Predator drone, and there's different schematics of size and measurements. We even had the government videographer that works with the Department of Homeland Security analyze the video, and he put some different filters of spectrum to see an actual structure of it, and it's a triangular craft or that has circular spheres in at each corner of the triangle, and he couldn't figure out what this was, and he said that it was something of the biggest findings that he'd ever seen on video, because he put different tests and energy and the filters that the videographer uses for analyzing craft.
So looking at that video that you shot, which is an excellent one, it seems to me that there's no doubt that this thing is real and not something manufactured. In other words, it's not a vision or a trick of the eye or anything like that. You can actually see, for lack of a better term, how they built the thing. I mean, you can't see the bolts, I don't guess, but almost. Am I right about that?
Yes, that's why we took it for an integrity test. We took it to to a good friend of ours that works for the government, and we have a testimonial, and we have what software he did to analyze this, because when you do a videotape, it's like a fingerprint. You know, if you modify it or you alter it or you move anything, you know, everything will be there as a record. But when he analyzed it, he was just going to do a 2-hour analyze. He went for 2 days, and he says, "I need to figure out what it is." And he went on and on and on and checked, and you know, he was inconclusive. For us, that was something that we had something unexplained. Is it engineered by human? We don't know. Is it something natural? Maybe. Or is it something extraterrestrial? That's the three questions we have, and which one is the right one, we don't know. But it's something unexplained.
Now, that gets me back to Noise Project about the UFO and the private plane collision there over in Mexico, just past the Texas border. Your witness, Noy, saw a huge explosion, but that was the next day, and your theory is that that was us trying to get rid of a disease using a nuclear explosion. Is that right?
Actually, the eyewitness in that case, John Chambers, and this is very interesting, Jerry, because I don't think we spoke to you since we took John Chambers, the eyewitness, out back to the location where he was standing when he was looking across the Rio Grande River into Mexico, and he showed us the very mountain peaks over which came this huge fireball. And what's very interesting about that is I had done a Photoshop simulation because Brad Newton had been out there and had taken a picture of that location, and then I had put in a nuclear bomb explosion from the 1960s that I found on a U.S. government website, and I had just put it into cropped it into the picture. And when I showed this to John, he said, "That is actually exactly what I saw, except because it was evening and the lighting was such, you couldn't really see the smoke. You saw the big fireball in the middle." But he is convinced it was between 4 and 6 miles wide. It was a glowing fireball that persisted for about half an hour, and John Chambers, the eyewitness, is the one who is convinced that this was a massive, possibly a low-yield thermonuclear device that was used to, quote-unquote, sanitize the area against any possible...
Yeah, but for most of our listeners that are not aware, there were Mexican soldiers who died almost instantly after going to the scene.
Right.
And
I was thinking while you were talking with Ismael about things that cannot be seen, energies that cannot be seen. We have all around us energies that can kill us, and we never see them. For example, electricity, certain types of gases, radioactivity can kill you. The soldiers who went to the UFO crash site in Mexico apparently stumbled upon some sort of energy or some sort of toxic element that caused all of them to perish within 1 hour of being exposed to it. And so obviously there was some kind of a risk, biological, chemical, radiological, we don't know. But there was, in that area where this occurred, some type of major health risk to all living tissue. And for that reason, many people believe, who are familiar with this case, believe that it's possible that either an extremely high-yield conventional explosive device was used or a low-yield nuclear device, such as a suitcase nuke, which was certainly in the country's arsenal in 1974, was used to basically, quote-unquote, sanitize or cauterize the possible infection site.
Now, this according to what you've uncovered in your investigations, this is a different kind of UFO than what Ishmael's talking about that giant triangle. This is something more seen in Mexico, I think. Smaller craft.
It impacted
with the private plane. Obviously, they were both physical because right. It was a crash.
Well, here's the other thing, the other part of this enigma that haunts us so much. The objects... The technologies that are employed in these objects do not have some sort of immunity to the universal laws of physics. I mean, from time to time, things go wrong. The creatures or the beings who pilot these things or control these things are not infallible. They are not apparently immortal beings. There have been many, many cases where dead bodies have been recovered. For example, Roswell, New Mexico, 1947. So things do go wrong. And another thing I always point out to people is that these beings are operating in an environment with which they are minimally familiar. It's not as similar to the operating environment under which their craft were designed, engineered to function. So you have, they also have exposure to waves of energy and bursts of energy that are coming from our man-made radars and microwaves and radios. Who knows how that affects their instrumentation as well. So from time to time, there seem to have been possibly a dozen over the course of the known history, possibly a dozen cases in which there appears to have been an actual crash of a physical object, and in some cases, the recovery of beings at that crash site. So these things do happen. These objects, as I mentioned, can be affected by the same rules of physics that affect our craft, and from time to time, they do come down.
Ishmael Quayler, when we talk about some of these things we can't see, that brings up to another part of your investigations. You do paranormal investigations, right? I mean, I don't know if you do ghost hunting, but you do lots of different things. Is that right?
That is right, sir. We have done about 108 cases of paranormal research in home residents. We use a scientific approach. Out of those 108 cases, 30 of them considered to have some type of paranormal activity. And, of course, our group is big, and I can tell you that our group has a spiritual point of view, and then you have the other side of the group that's a little more science. You put them both together, you know, we filter kind of put more value to our evidence for more possibility and theories. And some of the examples that we do is that we meet the family or the homeowner of the house or the location of the building, and we talk about some of the events that they're having, and most of them can be resolved to be conclusive of it was a wind draft, or we had a lady that called us up, and she was astonished about things banging on the top of the roof. We found out that she had a pecan tree right next to it, and the pecans were here on the top of the roof, and she fell off comfort that we helped her out, that it was, you know, explained of the events. But there's some events that we have captured that we cannot explain. We cannot say it's a ghost or a spirit because no one has seen one or anyone can claim that, but it's a theory. Just that it's unexplained, that it's paranormal. And we put everything in categories. There's, you know, you got your energies, the mists, the shadows, and also the electro voice phenomena, which is the EVPs. And I can tell you some amazing stories of people being very skeptic, and they tell me, you know, I believe what you do, but the bottom line is when they actually practice it and they have that field experience is what makes the difference on them change or scratch their heads that there are things up there that you cannot explain. And at the same time, we love to have fun doing it.
Yeah, when you take measurements of these unexplained things, like do you actually detect something physical, or is it just a hunch, or does something show up on your equipment?
It's more of our equipment comes out. We can't see these things, or we do see some of these things.
What does it look like, usually?
Well, you see a corner of your eyes. You see a corner of your eyes, or better say, a peripheral vision. You see more dark or more gray. And it's more like a filter. You see the things that pass through your corner of your eyes. But when you turn around and you stretch it, well, maybe it was my imagination. But when you capture on a camera and you put one thing to another, you know, one-to-one, things together, it comes up to say, well, actually, I did something because I caught it or I able to record it with a DVR. But physical, I can tell you different change of temperature. To be something common on research, like cold spots, even hot signatures. And that's where the thermal camera comes in, because this camera gives you a visual of temperature. And we have captured anomalies that resemble human and blue, which is cold, and this type of camera, which red will be hot. And that's what science and instruments help us put more value while we're capturing. And when we started doing these investigations, it's because we wanted to resolve, we wanted to give an answer, because we love to investigate by our jobs, what we do as law enforcement, criminal justice investigators. But the more that we scratch, the more that we get into this, the more unexplained. And we're just archiving every different category of paranormal activity that we have captured. Like we have videos of just plain shadows that we have captured. We have another category of green anomalies, energies that we pick up in different buildings. And then you have the bar energies that we have captured and also in cameras. And not only that we capture it, we have the people, the public, have brought excellent videos of surveillance of the same things we have captured, and we put those in categories. So it's a joint effort having the public participating in some of these events. But the main thing is the field experience. You actually have to practice it in order for you to say if the things real happen or not. I can tell you stories, show you videos and everything, but when you're right next to me and I give you an instrument and you come to do this practice, it's what it's going to make you determine if these things do exist or not. From my opinion, and the groups of 30 people have done this, and the public have captured things unexplained, can tell you that there are things out there unexplained. And where are they? Well, could it be a spirit? Maybe. We don't know. Could this be energy that lingers in the building that we release? Possibility. The thing is, It's unexplained. For today, it's a theory. Hopefully, tomorrow, it'll become a fact.
You know. While three of us are here, I kind of want to run a little exercise with us. I'm a nuts and bolts guy when it comes to UFOs. I think Noe Torres was originally, at least, until the more you get into this. And Ishmael is probably a nuts and bolts guy, but at the same time, you deal with spirituality and the paranormal. So here I want to kick us around. Some people say, oh, these UFOs are all imagination. You're just imagining them. Just like they say, well, you see a ghost or you see a strange mist in the forest or whatever you're seeing. You know, some people just say, well, it's your imagination. And some of it can be, no doubt about it. But I've got the real feeling that these UFOs are real and they're from someplace else. But I don't rule out the fact that there might be more than one reason. There might be some UFOs that are interdimensional or time travelers or something. What do you guys think about all this?
Well, let me tell you about, we had a lot of questions and then talk about extraterrestrial energies that manifest in homes. We're right now analyzing a video. We're not going to show it to this conference because we want to know what it is. So we're filming bats and birds and everything on night vision, but we actually are finding out orbs of energy going in top of roof, top of the roofs of houses. They go in and out like nothing. And, you know, we're filming this, and we're filming it, and it's not something common that you film. You know, we wait one night, nothing, wait 2 weeks, nothing there, and then one day, you see all these balls of light going in the rooftop of the houses, in and out of the houses, like nothing. So we're still want to determine, do all the tests, all the variables of what this could be. And once we say, okay, that's it, we cannot explain it, and then we'll bring it up to the public. But it's an amazing video that we have captured about energies coming in on top of roof houses. How that happens, we don't know where this is coming from. Is this extraterrestrial or third dimensional? No idea, just that it's unexplained, but with a lot of theories. I had a friend of mine that was very skeptic and didn't believe in anything. You know, he saw some of the videos and everything. And I go back to the field experience. So while I was talking to him, my friend of mine, and he's a law enforcement officer, I gave him one of our cameras, a night vision monocular, and I told him, oh, there's an orb, there's an energy right here. And I gave it to him. I give him the camera. When he picks it up, he sees that orb goes right in front of him, and it disappears. You know, I've seen this day in, day out when I practice with our research, but this was his first time. And he said about 50 times, he repeat, Mr. Cuellar, Ishmael, I saw an orb. Yeah, isn't that exciting? What do you think? He goes, well, I saw an orb. I know you saw an orb. It's all your fault. I'm not going to be able to sleep. Is that a spirit? And I go, no, it's not a spirit. We don't know what it is, but isn't that amazing? And he kept on that he saw an orb, and he kept on the following day. He was in shock, and we were laughing because that's the same way we reacted at the first time we saw some of these events. So he told his wife and told his family about it, and then they think that he's turning crazy, but, you know, it's not because they didn't see it. It's because they didn't witness it. You know, and some of these events are bringing up to the public. We're getting the public involved because we want to educate them. There is things out there. Don't take my word for it. Come with us, and the little that we have open to the public, we will show you what is out there. And even though they're in denial, when they see this and they practice this, they start scratching their heads and they go, by gosh, this has been happening all this time? How come anybody wasn't talking about it? Well, you know, that's what we're here. So a little that we do is hopefully we can have more help from the public, you know, more eyes and ears in the air and the sky to give more answers, you know, to gather more information.
Yeah, Noe Torres, after all these years of investigating UFOs, and you've investigated some pretty interesting stories, including that thing up in Northern California, what do you make of all this about the UFO phenomenon, period?
Well, there's one thing.
I mean, is it a mixture of a lot of things?
Yeah, it's extremely interesting, Jerry, and it's at the core message of Stanton Friedman's lectures, and I've heard hundreds of hours of him speaking and read most of his books. And at the very core of the message that he always delivers is that we are extremely puffed up and arrogant and presumptuous to believe that mankind has reached a level of knowledge where we know all that there is to be known in the universe. There are worlds and universes yet to be discovered. Each year, we are told that there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of new planets that have been discovered by astronomers, many of which could be Earth-like. They've had to revise the number of potential Earth-like planets in our galaxy alone by a factor of hundreds in just the past year or two. As our technology increases, for example, once again, getting back to the night vision and infrared and equipment that Ismael and his group use, as our technology gets us a better handle on our environment, then we are beginning to see things now that we have never really fully understood in a new light. And I believe that UFOs are that way, Jerry. I believe that we're at the beginning of a revelation about them, as we are finally getting to a point where we're starting to be able to detect some of these things. Something that's very, very apparent is that, well, two things. As we've already pointed out, number one, they are operating under rules of physics of which we are not currently aware and that we do not currently have a grasp on. And that's another thing that Stan Friedman, with his background as a nuclear physicist, brings very much to bear in his lectures, and will be doing so in Laredo. But the other thing is, they apparently, based on their past observable behavior, they do not want to be seen. They want to maintain their secrecy. I don't know if it's a matter of they do not want to influence the great experiment in which they are, you know, in which they are assigned to observe. I don't know exactly why, but there is definitely an attempt on the part of these beings to remain cloaked, to remain hidden, to remain out of view. So you take those two things together, and recently, you know, President Obama, we're having our big presidential election tomorrow. Recently, President Obama said the following after landing in Air Force One in Roswell, New Mexico. He said, "We had landed in Roswell. I announced to people when I landed that I had come in peace." And then he talks about how people always ask him, "Have you been to Roswell, and is it true what they say?" And this was the president's response: "I tell them, if I told you, I would have to kill you." Now, most people took that as a joke. And there was a little, you know, when they play the tape of this, there's some people chuckles in the background of the recording. But, you know, stop and think about it. What is it that the deep layers of America's military, industrial complex, and intelligence services, we know there's information there that has not been released to the general public, nor possibly will it ever be released. So there's something somewhat disturbing about that statement.
I agree with you, because 65 years is long enough to keep a secret.
Absolutely.
You know, there must be more to this.
And the other thing is, Jerry, that these visitors from outer space or from wherever they are, interdimensional, they've been coming to our planet for a really long time, possibly before we were even here as a species.
Yeah, there's some evidence that we might be ancestors of star children.
Exactly. And then there's also the theory that they're not really from someplace far away. They're they're from the neighborhood here. They just have remained undetected. You know, they may have underground bases in our solar system. They may have some kind of space-going vehicles that cannot be detected. So that's another theory. There's even a possibility they have bases here on our planet. So we don't know all that there is to be known. And leading scientists themselves, although it may pain them to admit this, they themselves must, in the end, admit that we're only seeing just a small part of how the universe functions up to this point.
When you fellows have conferences, you mentioned Noe and Ishmael, people come up to you afterwards and give you, you know, leads and good stories and tell you their stories, and not for publication necessarily. But can either of you or both of you tell me if you got any really interesting comments from somebody in the audience, like maybe at the Border Zone Conference or maybe coming up here in Laredo, somebody might be encouraged to come by and talk to you about it. Because I get a lot of leads that way when I go to these conferences, and I'm sure you guys do.
Well, I'll let Ismael answer first, and then I'll tell you some very interesting stories that have been told to me in the past couple of months.
I can tell you that one of the things that we haven't noticed, and we talked to the public afterwards, it's because some of these things happen, and we call this not fair evidence. We make this up as a group. We call this not fair evidence. Let me give you an example. We talk to the people. If you ever see something astonishing in your backyard, flow over your over the sky, would you talk about it? And they say, well, you know, it's kind of hard because you bring it up to your family member, a brother, sister, or wife. You talk about, you know, I just saw a UFO. Even then, you know, you get question of integrity test there from your family to tell you maybe you ate too much or you drank something or you feel sick or something. But you see it again, and it touches that person. And when we have these conferences, they come up to you and tell you what I just demonstrated. I seen it. But I don't like to talk about it because people might think I'm crazy. And I tell them, look, right now, technology, everybody has cameras and smartphones, and everybody's being educated that there's things that you can see, you can videotape this, and they bring up a lot of very good testimonial experiences. Well, there's this man in Edinburgh came up to us. He waited for us to all of us to leave. I mean, the people. He waited in line to be the last person. And we're there, and we're talking to every person, different stories, and everything, and he came up to us and says, Mr. Quirk, I got to talk to you. And I go, yes, I brought you something I wanted to show you. It's something very interesting. So he had a bubble wrapping around this rock, and I say, that's a pretty big rock that you have right there. And so it's not a rock. It's a fossil. It's a fossil. Okay, so I get the guys right next to me, my group, and we're there. And when he's unwrapping on this, he starts saying, look, you can see a nose, and you can see a forehead, and the cheek here and everything. And at the time, I tried to see as much as I could and detail on the rock, but I couldn't see the resemblance of the face. So, well, you know, I see something, but, you know, I really not seeing what you're seeing. And I go, well, see it again. He flips the rock the other side, and oh, my God, it was a fossilized skull that resembles, I can say an alien. And he said that it was a star child, and he found this in his ranch. And he wanted to get it analyzed, and he wanted to know, you know, who, where he can get some information, you know. So it was something heavy, rock, and we all witnessed it to see it. And it was a skull resembles of a humanoid, you know. It looked like those your typical grays, side view, and to this day we don't know what it is. So he wanted to know where he can get it analyzed, and in his story, the way he found it, he came from different generations that had found the rock in his ranch, and He wanted to get it analyzed, but he's afraid that the government might take it away and I get it back. So we're helping him. We're trying to get his testimonial and black and white and get everything for him so we can get that rock analyzed to see where it comes from, because it does resemble a lot of Alanian or of the ones that we call gray. So
I saw that. I saw that. It was very, very impressive to me. And he
Interesting. You mentioned the government might take it away. I got a couple of emails here from people who say, "Don't give it to the government. You'll never get it back." We don't have very much trust anymore. Maybe they don't deserve any trust. I don't know. Noy, what did you find out?
Well,
you could tell me you had something you wanted to tell us.
Yes, I have hundreds of stories from. After I've finished my presentations, people will come up. Some of them are extremely impressive. The most impressive ones to me, Jerry, are from pilots, from law enforcement officers, and from ex-military. And I had a gentleman that sat through one of my lectures where I was talking about the Mexico's Roswell case, and he came up to me afterward. He was obviously a disabled veteran and very proud to have served in the military. And he told me a story that just knocked my lights out. He was talking about he was in the service, he was in the Air Force, and he was part of a group of soldiers that was escorting some VIPs on a transport plane. And this was in the 1960s. They were going from San Francisco, I believe, to New York, across country, and about somewhere over the western U.S., I don't remember if he said Nevada, they saw a huge formation of flying saucers, is how he referred to them, and everybody on that plane was looking out the windows, amazed at these objects darting in and out around the plane, up and down, zigzagging, going below the plane, going above the plane, disc-shaped, extremely bright, a formation of many of these, maybe between 10 and 20 of them, all around the ship. The pilots were panicking. Some of the people on the plane were extremely concerned. They were radioing in what they were looking out at out their window. And then suddenly the objects vanished. And this gentleman that I spoke to and all the other servicemen on the plane were told not to speak about what they had seen.
An amazing story. And I've heard things similar to that over the years. It's amazing that people don't talk about it more than they do, but I guess they are pretty loyal to their government, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Laredo here again for the conference. Now, where is it, what time does it start, and who all is in it, and all of that?
Yeah, Ismael, you want to tell them about that beautiful facility? I know you've been out there and checked everything out. Go ahead and tell us about where it's going to be held.
It's going to be in TAMIU University, the Student Center, ballroom. We can fit about 800 people there. At the same time, we're going to be having, a public stargazing. We're going to have the largest telescope of Laredo. After the conference, we're going to have a night viewing for the public. We're going to be watching planet Jupiter and its moons. It's just amazing for how it's been looking in the South Texas part right now. So we're going to have a 16-inch telescope doing that for us. The facility is beautiful. It's state-of-the-art technology. We're going to have two giant projectors, audio, sound, text, and of course we're going to get this live with internet to broadcast this. Also, this is going to be happening on November 10th. The conference starts at 9 o'clock, and it finishes at 8 o'clock. And after 8 o'clock, we're going to have that stargazing night view for the public part of the conference.
That's a beautiful campus.
Wayne, you might run by who all's there again.
That's a beautiful campus, by the way, Texas A&M International University. It's in the northeast part of Laredo, just past the airport. It's a beautiful, beautiful campus. It's so scenic and pastoral. You know, if you get there real early in the morning, you can see deer grazing. You can see javelinas and other.
Yeah, I looked up those javelinos. They're interesting-looking creatures. I had never heard of them.
And anyway, as Ismael said, it's going to be there in the student center from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. And we're going to have our featured keynote speaker, of course, is Stanton Friedman, the world's top UFO researcher. And he'll be speaking twice. He'll close off the morning session. So in other words, he'll speak right before noon, and then he'll close off the conference, speaking at the evening session from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. So Stanton is going to talk about man's place in the universe in the morning, and he's going to talk about flying saucers and science, which is also a title of a wonderful book that he has done. Flying Saucers and Science will be the evening closing lecture. We're going to have Dr. Bob Gross, whom we talked about earlier in your show, talk about the Keksberg UFO crash. And we're going to have my good friend Steve Androsko. He's going to speak about aliens in the forest. And, of course, Ismael will be presenting Laredo UFO Mysteries. And I will be bringing everyone up to date on Mexico's Roswell UFO crash near the Texas-Mexico border in 1974.
And if you're in South Texas, we urge people to go there in person and see it for $10. It's an all-day affair. That's
right.
You can't get any better than that. It's $1 an hour.
We'd like to have the public support in the Laredo area and throughout South Texas. I know people are planning to travel from where I live in the Rio Grande Valley area, traveling up to Laredo to see this. It's only about 150 miles from here to there. And we've got some folks coming in from Corpus and down from San Antonio. We appreciate the public's interest in this because this will encourage our civic leaders and other organizations to sponsor similar events and have nationally recognized speakers of the caliber of Stanton Friedman and Travis Walton and others in the near future as well. So we appreciate everyone's support for this event. It will show everyone how much interest there is in not only in the Hispanic community but in throughout the state of Texas in the topic of UFOs.
And if you heard our Border Zone conference coverage here on Inception Radio, we'll have something very similar this weekend. And we'll have video as well at jerrypippin.com.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a link to our conference website, but just to let everyone know, it's laredoufo.com. Very simple to remember, Laredo, L-A-R-E-D-O, UFO.com.
Okay, thanks very much, both of you, for coming on. We're getting to become regulars here, but that's because you guys are active and doing a lot of things.
Well, thank you, Jerry. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, and thank you for inviting Ismael and myself to be on tonight. We're looking forward to visiting with you during the conference and afterward as well.
Okay, we'll stay in touch because I think you're doing a great service making these available to people worldwide. I appreciate it.
Thank
I know
you.
The audience does. We get hundreds of emails about it, and thank you.
Thank you.
We'll talk to the both of you later, and see you this weekend.